Hey, my name's Keith.
What's up? I'm Danny.
What's going on? I'm Dave, and it's all bad.
As you might have noticed, there's no more ads on this show, and that's possible because of Patreon and guys like you and gals. So please subscribe on Patreon. We got special gift for you, and tell a friend.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Yeah. Dude, thanks for coming on, Dave. Yeah. Welcome to Los Angeles.
It's a pleasure to come on your guys' show.
Dude,
there's a ton of people that listen to my stupid podcast that cannot get enough of It's All Bad. And when my show gets bad, they write in the comments, you should listen to It's All Bad.
That's fucked up.
So thank you for having me. Yeah. I appreciate it.
And hey. I've been on, Reno's been on, Keith hasn't.
Keith's gonna come on.
Yeah.
It'll be good. Yeah. All in the family.
Yeah.
It's all in
We've been talking about doing this for years. We were gonna do it over Zoom and we were doing our little
Did it over Zoom.
We did.
And
we
I had a resentment against Keith. Because Keith was in the pool.
Oh.
Right? Fucking.
Was I really?
It was during COVID.
Oh, I was.
Keith's in the pool up on poolside like this. Then in the middle of it, he's like, all right, I gotta go. And he leaves in the middle of the fucking episode.
Was that with Lawrence?
No.
No.
No Lawrence. It was with the old guy.
When we still had Mike and Charlie.
He was great. I love that.
Oh, I apologize to you for that. Because I left a few of them in the middle because I had I left a few with Lawrence because it would give me anxiety because they'd start spinning out about you know how he would get.
Yeah.
It was like him. I can't remember. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
One of them, you weren't even there, but I was just sitting I'm at home, but I'm on the back patio and it's me, Lawrence, and maybe Annie, somebody. And I'm like, dude, I can't fucking do this. You know what I mean? I just got up and went to bed. I was like,
listen, I know that I did not do that. I think you had to get your kid, but I'm a very petty person. Danny knows I'm a very petty person.
See, that makes sense. Cause I don't remember it being like anxiety. I'm telling you, at least twice, maybe three times, with Lawrence, he would start, hey, and dude, it was like the energy just got to me, and I'm like, fuck, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Shout out Lawrence.
Yeah. I have a friend in Long Island. He's a lieutenant on the police force in Queens. His name is TJ. I call him Butchie, and he loves Lawrence. He's
We all love Lawrence. You know, yes. We all love Lawrence.
So shout out to Butchie. He asked for a shout out.
Yeah, Butchie.
Yes.
Lawrence is doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had him on?
No. I'm unfamiliar. I know there's a sex thing.
Dude,
there's a sex thing. There's a meth thing. That's
sex
all I know.
Sex thing, meth thing.
He's Asian?
He's Asian,
So that's what I know.
He's a gooner.
Okay. When did gooning become a phrase?
I don't know.
When did that happen?
No. I think it was during the pandemic. I'm not joking.
Because everyone's sitting around at home with all their different screens. Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy.
What is gooning exactly?
It's funny. You guys should bring that up. I don't know if I told you this. I went to Andrew's thing at the Wiltern.
Uh-huh.
And they had a small, it'll be out soon, I'm sure. They had a, Channel 5 did a thing on gooners. And me and Danny, all we know is what we've learned from Lawrence, which is dudes who jack, but they're looking at a computer screen, the phone, the iPad, but all different pornos.
Is that what gooning is to multiple?
That's what we thought it was. But apparently, this thing, this guy is a famous, viral video where this guy pulls up at a drive-thru at a coffee shop and he's got his thing out, you know, or whatever. And then the girl's like, no, get the fuck. And he takes off, but the guy ended up killing himself, I think, because he was so scared, you know, humiliated. So this is all these Yahoos coming, who are pro gooners. And apparently, I think it's any kind of public masturbation or something.
Really?
I just learned this at that thing.
Wow.
I appreciate this because I've been seeing a lot of people mentioning gooning, gooner. I've never mentioned it. So you're saying a public masturbator is a gooner.
I believe that's what I picked up from the Channel 5 thing.
Because from what Lawrence told us, and we never fact checked it.
Yeah.
we don't fact check anything.
Is there a lot of fact checking on It's All Bad?
There's absolutely no fact checking.
Dude, we're street guys. None of us are going to Google that shit.
I don't want it getting into my algorithm. And yeah. Then I start getting some.
All of a sudden, you're
it's all gooning. Or like, do you need help? Hey, do you need help going to like, you know, to horny jail or whatever? Like the
horny
treatment
jail.
Center. Yeah.
What is horny jail?
That's like a treatment center. That's like when you go to a treatment center for sex addiction. Yeah, horny jail.
I'm learning so much. Yeah. So where is treatment for sex addiction?
Probably in the San Fernando Valley, you know, like right across the street from where the porn's being shot, you know?
And there's also some big fancy ones that celebs go to.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know where they are, but probably like fucking Colorado or something.
No.
Miami.
I'm learning so much so quickly.
Dude, it's not like, it gives me anxiety, like that shit. You know what I mean? That whole, because it's a whole different thing than any of the three of us did.
Yeah.
Like, you have to understand, like, their whole thing is getting high and masturbating. It's fucking bizarre. Like, that's all they do. It's those two things. Yeah. Right?
Well, I used to love to get high and masturbate, but I never considered.
Never
in public. And I liked The Goonies, the movie, but I never put the things together. When we were doing this show, when early on, we would do these, we called them gay episodes. And the episode was even gayer than the gayest dopey episode was this dude who would do these Zoom sex rooms. Do you guys know about this?
No.
Where like, guys, and it was pre-COVID, so Zoom wasn't like a thing.
Uh-huh.
So guys would be fucking each other on Zoom to other guys fucking each other on Zoom to other guys fucking each other.
No way.
It was this pipeline of male sex on Zoom.
Wow.
That's wild.
That's wild.
It's more than, it's gooning,
any,
Zooming gooning.
Yeah, any, it's gooning like, squared. Yeah.
Something's going on.
No, because you know there's these things like, it's just, the whole thing is just weird to me, like any of that like internet stuff, but like these, I don't know if you read, like, I know a dude who like, whatever, was on Facebook, gets a request from some cute girl, starts talking to her, and apparently they start, you know, Zooming or whatever. And he's, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden she's recording it and like bribes him.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole thing.
That's a whole industry.
We have, well, we know, I have two friends that that's happened to.
You do?
Yeah. We have two friends that that's happened to. I'm not going to put any of their names on. But yeah, we're like, they'll meet a girl, yeah, and they'll start talking to them and she'll come on and she'll be like playing with herself and they're like, oh, hell yeah. You know, and she's like, hey, I want to see what you're working with. And then they flip it and they go, hey, I have this recording of you. If you don't want it posted, you have to pay me $500 or $1,000 or $2,000. And the screwed up thing is, if you pay them, then they go, okay, now then they know that, the, you know, then
the hook
is in. Yeah. And then they're like, all right, give me $5,000 or I'm going to send it. And then one of them, I actually got a message on Facebook Messenger, because what they do is they'll see like the people that you're in contact with. Yeah.
Your mom and
shit. Them, yeah. And they'll send it to all of them.
Did
and I got a message.
Video?
Yeah.
You saw
it.
So
it was sent on Facebook and it was a private YouTube video, because you know how you could like share private on YouTube. And it was one of those of like him. And I was like, hey, man. He's like, dude, I know.
Horrible.
Yeah. And he just got out of a relationship with a girl. She got it too. Like, imagine that. Like, you know, like a few weeks after you get into a long-term relationship, she gets the video. And I was like, hey, dude, I got to tell you. He's like, man, I know. I was like, I reported it. He goes, hey, thank you. And I was like, word. And that was the last we talked about it.
Well, I live in the suburbs on Long Island. And, you know, I have a teenage daughter and there's a teenage kid and somebody got him and he did it. And it's a teenager, and he becomes suicidal. It's really scary bullying kind of thing. And, like, it's one thing if you don't have kids, you don't have a family, and he's just, like, embarrassed and shamed. It's another thing when it's, like, a 16-year-old kid who's, like, totally fucking fucked with.
The internet is the worst thing that's ever happened to this planet.
It really is.
It doesn't. The good does not outweigh the bad.
It's a great question, though. Does the good outweigh the bad? We wouldn't be able to make our podcast without it.
No,
but that would be okay.
Oh, who's that?
Who's on Hip Hop Time?
Reno, what do you know about gooning?
Well, gooning. I never heard the term until Lawrence said the term.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely, like, you know, porn and sex were a big thing with me that went hand in hand with meth use. So that used to, like, as soon as you'd like take a hit, turn on a video, it was like a next level. You know what I mean? Like, and you know what? I talked to Shelly about that. I was like, what is it about porn and speed? You know what I mean? Like, because like where we're from, it's like there are two kinds of tweakers. You get high and you start working on shit.
Yeah, mechanics.
or you get high and start looking at porn, wanting to fuck or do weird shit. You know what I mean? But you're just all in on either, you know, the road forks.
It's true.
Yeah. Were you a get high and start working on shit? I was not.
I like got high on meth for 2 weeks and I just went back to heroin. Meth just sent me back to heroin.
It's never really taken a hold of the East Coast.
Right. No, but I was here. Oh. I was on it for 2 weeks living out here in North Hollywood.
I'll do it.
That's the place to be on meth at, yeah.
We had the most classic meth dealer name, which was Diggy.
Diggy. That's a good name.
Diggy. Yeah. Diggy looked like he was straight out of Alpha Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Like the white tee and the big jeans, and he would show up with the fucking meth. And one day, I was like,
shit.
Oh, he was really sweet and like soft spoken. He was like a little, he was like younger than us. And I had come out from Florida. I was in rehab in Florida, and I came out here to not do heroin. But I moved in with one of my oldest friends who had started doing meth. And I pulled Diggy aside, and I'm like, do you think you could get me heroin? And Diggy's like, yeah, I could do it. I can do it. And then I was working on a TV show or a movie or something. I went to go work on the movie. And when I came back, I was like, what happened? And my friend took the heroin from Diggy because he didn't want to see me get high on the heroin. He like took the bullet from me. I got so fucking angry.
Dude.
Like he took it as in used it?
He took it as in used it and pretended like he was doing me a fucking favor.
Man, I just can't watch you do that to yourself.
That's exactly what it was.
You were so mad. You were so mad.
I'm still mad. I'm still mad, and my friend died. My friend died, and I'm still mad that he took my fucking heroin.
I don't, like, I mean, when I, because, like, we're... Where we're from, there wasn't a lot of heroin at that time in the 80s and 90s.
Not at all.
You had to, like, it was work. It wasn't like being in Hollywood or New York.
No,
like,
you said it best on an episode. You said one time these guys were doing heroin at a house party, and you were like, I'm not kidding you. Like, knowing someone that was doing heroin was like you knowing someone that murdered someone.
Yeah,
like, that's wild. How heavy it was to know someone that was shooting heroin.
Really?
It was like, yeah, it was fucking gnarly.
Like, oh, dude, like... This biker would come down from the mountains and cop from me, you know? He'd be like, Keith. And I'm like, dude, in the bathroom. You know, I don't even want that shit around me. You know, and because I was always like, to me, I'm like, well, fucking heroin just kills people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so fucking scary to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like... You, like, from Reno's house or my house, you'd have to go to, like, Pomona, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, well, in Corona, the Chicanos controlled it. You had to go, you had to know one of them. And, like, this one dude that I grew up with that was, like, from a big, heavy family from my city, Jude, shout out Jude, he was also kind of, like, a rocker. Uh-huh. So he was like kind of cool with some white motherfuckers, you know what I mean? But he would like, yeah, all right, I'll get it for you or whatever type thing. Wow. But like to be in and be able to go into the neighborhood or into the park and get it, like, yeah, you had to it was a whole thing. Yeah. Wow.
How'd you get started on dope?
I got started on it. I went to art school and there was a dude in a band who showed up and gave us a couple lines and I got sick and I was like, I'm never doing it again. And then I didn't. I didn't do it for years. And I started working in production. And the same kid who stole my heroin and who's dead, one of my best friends, Todd, he was living on my floor. He was on a bike delivering weed. He was a weed messenger in New York City. And he was really into coke. And he would find all these doormen that would sell coke or have the coke connect. And he found one of them had a service in Manhattan that delivered every drug. It was called Indulge. It was a black card with a white guy with a top hat on it.
No way. I was like a
scout, like a location scout. And I was in Michigan scouting a talk show. And when I came home, Todd was in my house with all these kids from my art school, all buying coke from this dealer. And I said to the dealer, I was like, wow, you're making a lot of money in my apartment. What are you going to give us? And he took out two bags of dope and he threw it on the table. And me and Todd sniffed it. And I was like, wow. And from there, it just kind of seeped in.
And those are like bags with like the stamp. Like,
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
Those, little New York emblems.
Do you remember what the emblem or the saying on the bag was?
I do not. No. I do not. I could claim I do, but I don't.
It's kind of classy. I remember in like 1988, this dude Lenart, I know from New York, he was sober, but he showed me, he's like, he had, you know, he had kicked open everything, but he showed me, he goes, we're at his house. He goes, this is what it comes in. It was this little like wax paper envelope. I was like, that's wild.
We had that, that dude Thatcher, he's a New York guy. He made a book of, all the bags that he had done, all the different dope bags.
What's his name?
Thatcher. That's, isn't that his name? Yeah. Thatcher. I'll find,
I had him on the show.
You did?
And he wouldn't say anything. And like, he was like, I can't tell a story. And it was one of the only episodes I couldn't use at all.
Really?
But his book is fucking awesome.
The book's amazing.
And he was a sweet guy.
He's a very sweet guy.
Yeah, very sweet.
He couldn't tell a single story?
He couldn't. I was like, dude, why'd you come? He was like, oh, I thought you wanted to see the book. And I was like, well, I did want to see the book, but I thought you were going to tell some stories. And he couldn't. He just like.
Like he froze kind of?
No. He had made a decision that he did not want to go public with anything he had done.
Oh, because he's an author.
I think maybe he had a family.
I think he's got a family.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We had guests on here, too, where you're just like, okay, let's get to the part where you smoke crack in the fucking Hollywood La Brea Motel. And no, it just didn't come, you know?
Well, we had another girl on from Orange County, who I'll leave nameless. We weren't able to post it, but...
No, we posted it.
We did?
For like a week. And then she came back and she was like, hey, I really need you to take that down because, like, this could be...
bad,
troublesome. Yeah, to your family.
It would be the equivalent, like, of you, like, she's not from around here, right? She's from Orange County, so it'd be like you having somebody from Jersey on, right? And she was telling something, remember? And she was like, from like 1990, and she goes, "Yeah," and they had a glass tray full of crank, and something clicked, and I was like, "Were you with so and so?" Remember?
Yeah.
And she turned fucking white.
Oh,
she
was no like, shit.
She like revealed some personal thing.
Well, I knew who the dudes were because weirdly, the dude she was dating was, and the kingpin dude, they were guys from my neighborhood that just happened to be in Orange County.
But it wasn't about her using, it was about who she was using with.
It was about the whole thing.
The whole thing, yeah.
There ended up being like, it's a wild story. I'll give you the name of the book. It's fucking wild.
Oh, but she wrote a book?
No, a dude wrote it about the other guy from my neighborhood, but. I mean, put it this way. It was a dope case. Then one dude went missing.
Oh, shit.
And then they smoked another guy in Huntington Beach, right?
Oh,
had him killed.
Yeah.
But the feds let him get killed. It's a wild story.
Whoa.
And, dude, even the cover of the book, Robert Mueller's on it. They had to bring Robert Mueller in to prosecute because there was so much dirty shit going on with the cops. I'm not kidding you. It's wild.
Oh, so the cops were dirty, too.
Yeah, but they, like...
I can understand why she didn't want that out there.
Well, the funniest thing is we do this show. I do this show. It's like, first of all, I do a show where I think it should be really famous, and every episode is someone overdosing on fentanyl. It's like, how could that be a big show? And you guys, you do the same thing, and we're busting it out, and like somebody with a family is like, wait, I don't feel comfortable with this. And we're like, what the fuck? But why would anybody, why do we all feel comfortable doing this?
I think I can speak for both podcasts, at least from what I know from people who listen to yours and listen to our, well, some people we don't know, but we get messages like where people are like, hey, it really helped me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if it's like.
You must get that too, huh?
He does.
You get a lot of, more than we do.
Wow.
I mean, you make a lot more episodes than we do.
A lot more episodes. What do you guys think? What do you guys think of your new spot?
It's amazing.
Are you guys feeling comfortable? Yeah. You like it?
Yeah, it's great.
Dave's our very first guest in this new space. We moved around. We've been consistently. Damn. We recorded at the
World
Tea
War
Farm. 7.
Oh.
World War 7, the Tea Farm, the Feed the Street
Feed the
Studio.
Streets headquarters.
NoHo Recovery.
NoHo Recovery.
We did,
Keith's,
we recorded
Keith's
at
deck.
Keith's deck, deck, Keith's pool.
Keith's pool. Keith's pool. Inside Keith's pool.
We recorded. We did episodes on Zoom. Then we did Tropical. Then we did the studio one block away from here, which was dope. Where we did the
last week.
Yeah, literally. And then this. And then after doing that one, a friend was like, "Hey, would you guys want to? You know, hey, we got the studio. We have a space." And it just kind of like, dude, it landed. Yeah.
It's beautiful. I want to congratulate you guys.
Thank you. Yeah.
When we started Dopey, we didn't use our names. We didn't show our faces. We put the Dopey
logo
over
our
eyes because Chris was getting his PhD, and I had I guess she was fucking 6 at the time, and I was worried that people would Google my last name and see heroin, and I was like, I didn't want her to get made fun of. And then Chris died. And I still didn't use my last name. And I went on Maron's podcast, and he goes, "You're a fucking idiot if you don't use your last name. You're trying to make like a big podcast, and you're not going to use your last name." I was like, "All right." And I started using it after that.
Dude.
He's right, you know, because yeah. I am like sick trying to make this big show, but I'm trying to make this show that will never get big. Like, that's the conundrum of the whole thing, which is funny.
I don't know. I saw you on Rolling Stone recently, on the Rolling Stone Instagram. Yeah,
I've been writing for Rolling Stone.
No shit.
I wrote two articles for Rolling Stone, which was super cool. And
What are they called?
I wrote this article about jam band Yellow Balloon groups.
Uh-huh,
you know how like Grateful Dead course, did Wharf Rats,
and then Fish does Fells, Fellowship, yeah,
and, and Ween does Sunny Bunnies, and all.
Wait, they all have sober.
They all have sober groups. There's like 10.
Yeah,
11. Really? Yeah,
and
yeah.
then at shows at set break they'll go and they'll have a meeting. So you look for the yellow balloons, yeah, and that's how you know.
Yellow balloon is the indicator.
Yeah.
So I wrote a piece about that, and I wrote a piece about Nick Reiner.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you had him on the pod.
We had him on the pod 5 times.
Wow.
Whoa. You did?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Does he, like, not like, is he mentally ill? He has to be, right?
I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
but I would imagine he's, you know.
I heard your recent one with him. The one not too long ago.
No, it wasn't recent. I made the suspect decision to replay it of the whole thing because I'm half opportunistic and half like, let's examine this thing.
Yeah.
And in the end, though, I felt so sick about the whole thing, I took everything down.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Because I got sick with the whole thing.
It honestly, it's really fucking heavy. It's really fucking heavy, man. You think about that as a parent, like, you know what I mean? You're a parent. I mean, whatever, parent or not, as a human being, I mean, that guy's dad just did everything in his fucking power to help that kid heal. You know what I mean? It, you know, brought him into the biz. They made a movie about his disease. They like, I mean, it's
well, you wild, know, wild. I'll tell you, the thing is
really wild.
The majority of, I don't know if it's like this in New York, but here, like, I mean, like the sober companion thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
The four of us could make a phone call and get a fucking sober companion job tonight. That's how many wealthy kids there is that are fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, the shit that goes on in the wealthy communities is so fucking gnarly. Like
the enablement. Crazy enablement.
Yeah, think, you have a dad who's, whatever it is, a director, and he's gone for a year. The kid's at home, has endless money, going to some private school with other kids with endless money. Yeah. In my opinion, you know, there's even if there's three kids who have parents that are around and doing their best, that's fine. But they have one friend whose parents are never around. I'm not saying that's the case with Nick. I mean, in general, you know, these giant businessmen and shit. Like, think about the dudes we know that do that. All of our friends, John, like Nikki.
Oh,
and you're like, God, I every time I hear the story, I'm like, how many fucking billionaire grandkids is there?
Yeah.
Well, how many? I mean, the story goes different though with every individual. Like, one kid might get neglected by his parents and he becomes like a captain of industry or a doctor or something.
Yeah.
Another kid becomes the worst junkie in the world. The thing about Nick that I thought, I mean, it's not that profound, but it seemed very profound to me, is that when he came in to do the show, he was just like Chris. You know, it was like he was very similar, and the two of them were arguing with me about harm reduction versus abstinence.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we would talk about mostly. And then Chris wound up dying, and Nick...
Oh, I thought Chris was on the program.
He was, but Chris was really smart. And he saw the statistics that said medicated-assisted treatment was more successful than abstinence. And he knew that if we were anti-medicated-assisted treatment, we'd be alienating so many people. And alienating people is probably not the best thing to do.
What's medicated-assisted?
That's Suboxone. Oh, methadone.
That's
methadone.
Sublocade.
Yeah. No, we had, like, our arguably Danny's best friend, a guy that I was extremely close to, too, that was on... The pod, the episode's called Alternative Recovery with, is it Chop Chop or does it say Chris?
Chris Collins,
with Chris Collins. He was a treatment center owner. He was somebody who believed in what you just described. And he also agreed in like microdosing and expanding your mind and all this kind of stuff. But really, in the end, he was just an extremely clever, hardcore addict who really just fucking manipulated himself into figuring out how to take Adderall and microdose and fucking
Kratom.
Well, the funny thing is, it might start, though, with the best of intentions. Like, it might start, like, how many people do you know with, like, 15 years that are like, I'm going to do ayahuasca retreat?
Yeah.
And they can do it.
Yeah.
But then there's a few people that it triggers that thing, yeah, and then all of a sudden, yeah, all the fuse gets lit.
No, yeah, totally. And this is somebody who had very little time over and over again. And there was a period he had a couple years, but in, you know, the little 6, 8, 9 months, 14 months, treatment center owner, doing spiritual stuff, like all these great ideas. And yeah, he's not with us anymore. And he left 3 small children behind.
When did he die?
Well, 3 years ago. Yeah.
And he overdosed?
Overdosed.
Yeah.
But dude, we had him on 10 days later. He, you know, we posted the episode and a week later he passed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had been talking about bringing him on for years. Like you know, he was the guy, him and I started doing dope together. You know, right, like he was like, that was my buddy.
He brought Danny into treatment at the treatment center I was working at.
Yeah. I would like go, like he would like, he was a guy, like, he never gave up on me. You know, he always, like, tried to show up, would, like, go in and check on me. And then when he was on the street, I would always go and try to help him. And, like, my, you know, my harm reduction way would be, like, to invite him to come stay with me because he's living in a tent on Skid Row. And his uncle used to find me, like, used to then, like, come over and be like, what are you doing? You're fucking robbing him of his bottom. Get him out of here. Right, like, you know, he's his Allen on you. Dude, he would go on Facebook and start posting. He'd be like, This guy is doing heroin with my nephew, and he's staying at this address. And so,
were you using at that point?
Yeah, he's posting, putting me on blast. And I would like message him. I'd be like, I'm not gonna say his name. I was like, dude, I'm gonna come to your house and I'm gonna beat your ass. You know.
So what happened?
Huh?
Did you ever deal with him?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? We recently, after Chris passed away, you know, he was like, you know, like we made up, you know, it's like, he's got a 1-year-old, we're homies now, but it's that thing where it's like, he wanted to help his, you know, he was being told was, it's like similar to that, you know, to the conversation that you guys would have. It's like, well, you know, like, harm reduction is me inviting my friend that's living in a tent in Skid Row, because I don't want to see him fucking get a hot shot or fall out and not be found there, you know, versus like his uncle that's like going to Al-Anon and being told like, no, you need to cut him off completely so he could have his bottom and get the help that he needs. You know, I don't know which one works. I don't know which one's better.
But I think if you're using, it's not harm reduction. It's, it's like a sleepover party. Like when you're using by yourself and you find somebody else who's using and you're like, come over and we could use. It's like you're being a little kid and having them over.
The only person that I ever heard out loud talk in a positive way about harm reduction are fucking treatment center owners because they don't want to lose clients. Those are the only people that I've ever been heard be like, oh yeah, this is like people in, at least to my like recall, people in our circle, people that have time that are having have quality recovery are doing the fucking deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's except for a couple of our friends that are still doing Suboxone, that are still kind of doing their thing, and we're like, you know what?
There's people.
Let them go. Let them do
You know
their thing.
What? Hey, it's way above my pay grade what works for people. I know that, like, there's guys that I sponsor. There's a guy that I, you know, because I for years volunteered and then worked in harm reduction, you know, for years. And there's
still
a guy.
You do needle exchange and stuff.
Not after opening the cafe, but I did trainings with them.
Did
you
not do needle exchange, like, because you were like, this isn't cool, or was it just stop?
No. I mean, I still love it. I still, too busy, you know, but I still love what they do. I love the work that they do. I started doing trainings with them where I would go into organizations and like educate them on harm reduction, on drug trends. I would build out like the educational side of it. Dude, when you get released from county jail in Los Angeles, there's a video they show, and it's me explaining how to administer Narcan. And I've had hey fool, I was getting out, and they showed me a video of you and gave me some Narcan, you know? And I was
awesome.
You guys implemented that program in the county. Uh-huh. That's fucking cool.
But then also,
I'm all for the distribution of Narcan and needle exchanges. Yeah. I mean, out where I grew up, like, needles were like, you could not get your fucking hands. Someone's grandma had to be a diabetic for you to be able to get your hands on a needle. And then that motherfucker goes around. And
I have a bit of a hang up with the way the needle exchange goes.
Yeah.
Lots of people do. Yeah. But I'm all for Danny saying fool in the Narcan thing. Yeah. I like how you guys fucking, no one says fool like that anymore.
It's the fool.
Yeah, I like that.
Because the
like
needle
that.
Exchange, I did it with Danny twice, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, but I'm like, if you bring 5 needles, you can get 200 needles. Like, you don't really have to bring anything, and they'll give you needles.
Oh, I thought it was 2 for 1.
No.
I thought it was two for one.
I love the needle exchange. When I was using out here,
But do you guys have them littered everywhere?
Well, no. I love the needle exchange here, because, like, when I was here, they didn't sell needles in the pharmacy. Yeah. I would buy all my needles on Fifth Street or whatever for $2 a needle or $1 a needle or whatever. And when I found a needle truck and they give you the package with the cooker.
Yeah, the water.
But the cooker gets so hot. Yeah. They need to do something around the cooker. Yeah. They give you the nice little cottons. I felt like I was living on the penthouse. I love that. Because all the needles I had were disgusting and old and hurt.
God.
So if you use needle exchange needles, it's great. Yeah. I think it's great.
When you would buy them on Fifth Street, were they in a wrapper, or you just?
Yeah, no, they were in a wrapper. What they would do is those guys would go.
There, yeah, but I was talking about Fifth Street.
No, dude, I would. Yeah, everything I bought was fucking sealed to the max. Okay. I'm like,
no, because they would get
neurotic.
Them from a needle exchange. That's their hustle.
Oh,
they go to
slang them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they go and they get a pack and then they slang them to guys that are just out there, you know? Yeah, and you would walk down on like Fifth and Broadway, Fifth and Spring, and fools would be walking around at night saying outfits, cookers, tourniquets,
$1.
$1, yeah.
And I'd be like, give me 10.
No, yeah. I went with Dan. Do you remember some dude showed up? He had a basket full of them.
Well, because guys will be like, they're in areas where they don't have needle exchanges, so they'll go and they'll get them and they'll bring them and get them back. Or they'll sell them or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, hundreds of them.
That's crazy. Yeah. And then they get like 1,000 when they bring 100.
Or maybe they get 100, but
that's so I have crazy. 1,000 when you give me 1,000,000. Please. I'm ready.
Oh my God.
A friend of ours was like, I'll leave him nameless, but a couple of friends of ours were in this house with this famous guitar player. And dude would just like, you know, like they'd get loaded in one room. And then when it was just absolutely disgusting, go to the next one, a giant house in Los Feliz. And eventually one day, one of them opened, like there's like a door. And there would be a door there, you know? So, like, you know what I mean? They're, like, they open to each other. And he opened this closet door. And, dude, it was a fucking 5-foot pile thing of needles.
No.
Fell out of
the
thing.
My God.
It's like heaven, man.
Yeah, like, they couldn't shut. They couldn't open the bedroom door because there was so many fucking needles that came out.
Oh, my God.
I know there's a guy who I worked at when I volunteered at the needle exchange. I would see him there every week. He was a dude that I sold dope to and then I bought dope from. And I would see him there every week. And I was always kind and I was always polite to him. And, you know, and I was never, and I never judged him or anything because I've been there. I've been on the other side of the table.
Of course.
And, you know, years in, I got a call saying, hey, I'm with this guy. Hey, I'm with the guy. He wants to get help getting into treatment. I took the call and it was that guy, you know?
Really?
And he's been sober for 3 years. And I sponsor the guy now.
This fool is like a miracle worker over here.
Everybody in LA loves Danny. Like, you can't really cross Danny. Like, if me and Reno hated Danny, we couldn't even let you know. You know what I mean? Like, the check gets canceled. But Danny, I go there with Danny and, like, some dude pulls up in a fucking Lexus, a clean one, like a big body Lexus. He gets out. This Russian dude gets out and he's, like, stocky, but his arms are wrapped. His forearms are wrapped in, like,
Ace bandage?
Yeah, but it was like a black ace bandage, wasn't it?
Uh-huh, yeah.
But from here,
like the shit Carmelo Anthony used to play in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. No, for real.
Yeah.
But his fucking forearms are enormous.
Lots of gooning.
And he gets out and he's really excited to see Danny and he's talking to him.
In Russian.
In Russian.
That's
but
awesome.
A couple weeks later, these like gangster dudes, well, they thought they were gangsters, show up and they're like threatening Nick and them in the thing. And
they were like, they pulled up and they were like trying to like harass them to get more needle, like give us this shit and whatever, just being rude, you know? Like,
that dude, John, gets out of the car and goes, hey, these guys are just trying to help us. You should be cool. And they were like, what? Fuck you, old man. And John was like, okay. And walked to his car and like, what? 2 minutes later, a fucking Range Rover flies in, and these two fucking Russian, like, 25-year-olds get out with heaters.
Yeah.
Damn.
In minutes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were like, whoever the fuck John is, like, John's no joke.
No joke. Yeah.
Seriously, I'm talking like, he just said, okay.
Yeah.
He literally
and he was
said
like, yeah,
that.
Yeah. Like, and they were like, and yeah, and they left, and he was like, hey, he's like, or they were about to, the other guys were leaving, you know, they're all shook, and he goes, hey, he's like, you guys be nice to these people because they're nice to us because they do this to help us, you know?
That's but how John, it should be.
But I told Danny before that happened, Danny's talking to him. Danny's just like, that's my buddy John. I go, there's something about John. Because John's completely clean and well put together and drives a really clean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously
has a dope habit, but I'm like, I told Danny, I go, I don't know who John is, but John's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What if that's that old school Russian, like,
what's up, exactly, what's up? Yeah.
Got out with heaters. Like, the Range Rover flies in.
Yeah. You know who's going, you know who a lot of the people that are going to needle exchanges now are? Hmm. Peptide guys.
Bullshit.
Because everyone's on the peptide.
So they need the needle. They don't need the needles. You spend that money on peptides, they don't give you the couple needles on the side.
Yeah. You shoot peptides?
Yeah.
You could order
it. Yeah.
In your belly. Yeah. In your belly.
Not like IV, but yeah, it's all like money.
Oh, you're talking about like Zepbound and all that shit. No,
well, Reda. Reda.
Those are peptides.
No,
GLP-1s
what's Reda?
Ozempic
and CJC and fucking
NAD.
NAD, all that stuff.
And they're all wearing Rolexes and they're ripped, these peptide dudes. What the fuck is that?
It's an interesting crowd that would come. Like, it was a lot of street people, but like, we'd see like older couple of gay dudes, but like completely well put together, like
about to go shoot some speed and get weird.
Yeah, but you can tell like they had jobs.
The interesting thing is too. So when you're doing it, when you're working there, you there's a survey that you do, and basically to keep the funding coming in, you don't ever ask the people like what their real name is, you know. But you log it, so they'll have like an initial and then like a code number or something, you know. And you log it, and you'll always ask like what happened to you, you know. Or we used to before. Now it's changed. It's like it's eased up a little bit, but the questions were like, what happened to your last ones? If you know, like, what happened, or like, do you return them? Were they taken by the police? Did you get rid of them? How many times are you injecting throughout the week? And and what are you using? You know,
right.
And most of it is heroin, which then turned to fentanyl, or a lot of amphetamine use, you know. And then, but every once in a while, you'll get like people, you know, where it'll be like, they'll like, you'll get
steroids.
Steroids is like some people will come for steroids and stuff. You
know? Now there's the peptide crew is showing up.
I don't know.
Is that for real?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, because they're shooting like so with I guess with Ozempic it's like once a week, so it's not that many. But there's other ones where you do them daily, you know.
HGH
daily?
HGH I don't think is a peptide, but it's
they shoot it in your butt.
Human growth hormone.
Yeah. The question is, and maybe you guys know, like an IV drug addict, right? Who's like not that healthy, whatever. They're like, fuck it, I want to get in shape. And they start exercising and they're like, well, I'm not getting the results I want. And someone's like, all right, try the peptide, try the HGH. So he starts using a needle and then he relapses because he's using the needle. Have you heard that story?
That's happened
yet?
To me before.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That happened to me during one of my comebacks. I was.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah, man, I got clean and sober and I was. It was after a really tragic relapse where I lost this career I had in the same industry I'm in now, but I had like a very public relapse and
it was public?
Kind of because I was like sober 7 years. I had been sober a long time in Orange County. I started doing what I do in the fashion and footwear industry and I worked for this company and I was sober a long time when we started and then we started like the company blew up and then we started like going to like Japan and New York and like these guys like they drank and they maybe smoked a little weed, like they didn't get crazy but they partied and there was like women around and it was like a scene in the clubs and the brand was like very connected to music and culture and I was like, damn, I'm missing out. You know what I mean? Like, here I am, like, going to men's retreats and meetings and shit. You know what I mean? When they're like, so I started doing more of that. And then, anyway, what ended up happening is it took a long time, but I eventually spiraled and I had, you know, started using again. And everybody kind of propped me up for a long time. But then eventually at a big trade show in Las Vegas, I had a full on, like, hangover style, like, fell off the cliff and, like, you know what I mean? And
ended up what'd you do? Anything rad?
No, I mean, well, yeah, on my run, I got busy, but like.
No, I mean, at the
trade
show. I got
busy, fool.
Well, no, the guys were like, I mean, I went into it with the best of intentions, man. And they were like, dude, like, you just got to, they were trying to be encouraging for a long time. And then finally this trade show, they were like, because I mean, dude, as a brand, we hosted a big party at fucking Tao during the show and it was a whole thing. And so it was. partying and raging and all this stuff was very intertwined with the business. But if you were in sales with the brand, you had to be at the booth at 8 a.m. and you had to work all day till like 6 p.m. You know what I mean? And they did, it just got to the point where they started like kind of made up rules, you know, like, fuck, dude, if you're late, you're going to get docked, you're going to get this, you're going to get that. Because they tried talking to me and like, you're you know what I mean? It just wasn't that. Working, you know? I was like, okay, I'm not going to fucking, you know, do drugs. I'm not going to get crazy. And then as soon as I had a couple cocktails, like that night, I just remember like I was like in, we're at a strip club. I'm in like a bathroom stall with three people doing blow. We get kicked out. And then after that, I black out and I don't even know what happens. I had like, we had, the brand had money. So I had my own suite at like one of the really nice wings of like one of the hotels. You know how they always have like the hotel whatever. Uh-huh. And dude, I woke up the morning of the first day of the trade show and I needed to be down there at the booth at like 8 a.m. And I was in this giant suite with a king size bed and I was passed out on the fucking nightstand, like hunched over the nightstand. And it had like a top on it. And I was covered in like black shit. Like I threw up on myself, like black shit or something. And then I just looked over at the alarm clock. It was like 10:30. And I was like, fuck, man.
But it didn't get triggered by shooting peptides or HGH.
So, sorry. This is like a true Hollywood story. No, what ended up happening was tragic relapse, whole thing. And on one of my comebacks, I was like working out at Equinox and spinning and working out and doing all this stuff. And then somebody turned me on to HGH. And I was using needles, doing HGH a few milligrams a day. And then somebody was like, oh, you should do HCG too for weight loss. And the next thing you know, I'm like, shooting my belly like twice a day. And I had like, was starting this business and kind of getting back to my position in life. And then like I had about 65 days sober and I just fucking, you know what I mean? Like one misstep one night and it was a wrap. I was out, you know?
I had this friend of mine who was telling me like he'd be broken. He'd be loaded, but he would just like draw his blood and squirt it on the ceiling. Like just addicted to the ritual.
Yeah, I didn't like the ritual that much. I liked being high, but I wasn't like, oh, yeah, let me get down. And, like, some people are like that, though. They're like my works and, like, trying to be all, you know.
I've heard of guys in treatment, like shooting up water and stuff like that. You know?
When me and Chris were doing the show in the beginning, me and him were obsessed with every aspect of making dopey. And he was obsessed with the Reddit opioids page. And he's like, I have an idea. He goes, I'm going to start shooting water into my neck and posting it on the Reddit opioids page and to get people to come listen to the show. And I was like, don't do it. I was like, please don't do it. And I had to talk him out of the...
He didn't do it?
He didn't do it.
Thank God. He had a big old water miss.
No, that was a classic Chris thing. He didn't miss. He never tied off.
Really?
Like that was one of the things he would always flex. He'd be like, I never had to tie off. That was a great...
Yeah, I don't think I did really either.
I had to tie off. I had horrible.
But now, like, I could, like, do one of these and, like, you know, I remember, like, now I'm like, I got a big one right here.
That's a full-on veteran move is this one right here. That's the one right there. Just bink.
Do you think that stuff leads back to...
I think... it could.
Yeah.
And I want to hear, like I think those stories are important.
That was a super long way around for me to say. I agree with you.
You want it to be on the end table. Throwing up on the side.
Exactly.
I like that.
It was crazy.
Because you're very large and the end table's very little.
You were literally laying over it.
I was like the letter U, but upside down on the fucking nightstand, dude.
Great.
Oh, that's amazing.
That was awful. Oh. And then when I went to the booth, I was just like... My buddy's like, dude, you look like shit. You're like, you know what I mean? You let everybody down again. He's like, dude, go get some fucking rest. And I knew it was a wrap. I just went into the city and fucking got crazy.
The best thing in the story is that nobody touched the king size bed. you have this very pristine bed, and then you have Big Reno over the fucking night table.
He didn't want to fuck it up. Yeah.
Left my shit in that room for like 5 days and went on a rager.
Dude,
and then came back to the hotel like,
dude, Vegas is wild.
I remember trying to get We tried to get, we were out in Vegas. We went out there, dude. This is a funny, I don't know if I've probably told this, but you know, we tell them all over and over. But we went out there, we were with these guys, and there was, at a pretty early age, I started working in like the cannabis industry, you know? So we was like, you know, when there was only 8 dispensaries in Los Angeles. Yeah. And the guy we worked for was like, hey, there's this underground cannabis cup that's happening in Vegas. We got to cruise out there to it. And it was called the High Rollers Cup. And it was dope. And it was all these guys from Vegas. But this is when, like,
what venue was this thing at? Because Vegas was, like, the last state to be, like, you can
smoke
weed.
This was, dude, this was, like, when Vegas, we were, like, 18 at the time. So Vegas was still very, very, very illegal. Very illegal, you know?
Like, you can get years in Vegas for weed.
Oh, so this
And
was
you
like,
guys are doing the fucking underground
cannabis
cup.
We had the cannabis cup, dude. Yeah. It was crazy, you know? And it was, like, judges and all these guys, like, these big, like, they used to call them pot stars, you know, and it was like Eddie Lepp and like Soma and all these guys that have like strains and fucking
Jack Herrera
was there. Yeah, of course, you know.
What was the guy's name from High Times magazine that was like the founder of Normal?
Steve Hager.
Something like
Steve Bloom and Steve Hager.
Yeah. I don't know if they were all those guys there, you know. Shit. And we were kids, like we weren't even old enough we weren't even like old enough to drink or get a room or anything. We were even 17 and we're there and our boss is like, do you guys want to come to this? And like, imagine like our life, like we fucking made it, you know? And we were there and we're hanging out with all these guys. We didn't know who they were, but like, we just knew that we like had weed strains named after these guys. Amazing. You know? And we're meeting them and we get out there and there was this kid, I'm not going to say his name. I'll tell you his first name, Andrew. I've seen him since. And he was like the first crackhead we knew. And we would always be like, Andrew, you're a crackhead. And he'd be like, no, stop calling me that. We're like, dude, you're a fucking crackhead. You know, he's like, I'm not a crackhead, you know? And so we went out and like the way that it worked was they gave you like the pill box, you know, like the little like, you know, with 7 different strains of all the different things. And you would smoke them all and judge them. And they would do you like one with hash and whatever. It was so dope, you know, like as a kid.
Awesome.
And it was, and all these strains were like amazing. Our friend Alan, who was like this Russian kid that we knew, had this Kush strain that he didn't even grow, but like he got it from somebody. And it was like when OG Kush was like the best weed in the world, you know? So Alan was like, I want to come to the cup. He's like, my strain's the best. And we're like, so we somehow got him in and he came and he walked around to all the judges and he was like, here, bro, my strain is better. And he didn't enter it, you know, but he like kind of won the cannabis cup.
No,
his strain was the best, you know?
Dude, I was sure you were going to say his strain was crack.
Dude, that was it. So Andrew, the kid, we're like, he went out there with, I don't even know why we brought him with us, you know? But we're like, you're a crackhead, Andrew. He's like, no, stop calling me that. I'm like, yeah, you are. And I'm not a crackhead. So we were all like, you know, we all party and we do the cannabis cup. And we got a room at this hotel. I don't remember, whatever. It was the Saint-Tropez Inn. We didn't know what Saint-Tropez was, so we called it the Saint-Tropez, you know, because that's how it's spelled. Yeah. We didn't know it, you know. And we stayed there, and my friend Mark, rest in peace. So we went, and we, like, went out to a strip club for the night, and we're coming back, and we're, like, we're in a cab. We're like, oh, where are you staying? We're like, we're at the Saint-Tropez, you know? And they're like, oh, the Saint-Tropez? And the cab driver's like, oh, so you guys are a couple, huh? We're like, a couple? What are you talking about? So the Saint-Tropez is, like, a well-known gay nudist resort.
It's a nudist resort,
and we're kind of staying there. We're like, why are these fools walking around naked looking into
no way
room? And it's a bunch of us kids staying there. Damn. You know, we had like the honeymoon suite, you know. We had a heart tub in the thing. So we go out and it's like the last day and we're about to leave and we're like and we were clowning Andrew again and he's like, where'd you go, Andrew? Were you fucking crackhead? Were you smoking crack? He's like, no, I wasn't. He's like, hey, you guys want to smoke a joint? And I'll never forget it, he had a joint that he rolled up with, like, you remember the flavored rolling paper?
He had a
blueberry rolling paper, and I think he'd put like a strawberry haze or something. That was like one of the, or he goes, here, I got this, and he rolled it up, and we were like, dude, dope, you know, like, all right, Andrew, you came through finally. So we passed this joint around, and I'll never forget, we hit it, and I'm like, what? This tastes a little funny. And like, I pass it to Keith, you know, and he goes, this does taste funny, you know, like, why does it smell like plastic, you know, and we're like, wait, why are our lips turning numb, you know? And he put some crack in the fucking joint, you know? And he looks at us and he goes, who's the crackhead now? You rolled it, you know? But then, like, it gets to Reno and I'm like, wait, give me that joint, like, you know, and I'm trying to smoke it. But I remember he went out somewhere and he found, like, you know, he went and he, like, got like tapped in with all the Vegas guys. And like, basically they, I remember them telling us, they're like, oh, we cut like you, how you guys cut your stuff with baking soda or whatever. They were cutting their meth with like, with rocket, with jet fuel out there. With
their
like some
crack or their meth?
Their meth. Yeah. Oh, so we got some of the meth. Yeah. Cause that's, cause they had all like the labs out there that are making like, you know, that are making the rockets and all that stuff. They would cut it with that stuff.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How's that? Was that better?
Dude, it was great.
The rocket, I mean,
we were 18. Everything was great the at best. The time, you know? Yeah, but that was a fun, that was a,
oh,
that was
my
a
gosh.
Fun trip.
I know. I remember doing drugs when you were that age. You're like,
dude, it was so rad.
Dude, every desert area is fucked up.
Yeah.
It is.
Vegas, it Riverside. Is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Bakersfield, Fresno,
Lancaster. Yeah.
Oh, you just keep going. It's, if it's not Palm Springs or like,
yeah,
you know, like Rancho Mirage and all those like little cities or whatever, everyone around there is like fucking, like there's Desert Hot Springs, or DHS, if you're in jail, that's what they call it.
DHS.
You go through there and there's this sick resort that used to be Al Capone's house back in the day, back when everybody had a place in Palm Springs.
Oh, Two Bunch Palms.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the fucking sickest
it's
place
so
to take your wife or your woman.
Yeah.
It's so fucking dope. But you got to go through, like, the hills have eyes.
Yeah,
like, dude,
yeah,
when I was going there with D, we're pulling through, because you go through residential neighborhood to get there, and there was just some, like, crazy, like, lady in a wheelchair, and then her, like, weird, like, emo shoegazer, like, son, who's, like, 9 feet tall, like, pushing her down the street.
Dude.
Fucking.
And they get loaded together?
When, I probably, on their way to go, like, cash her fucking social security check.
You ever party in the desert?
No, but I lived out here with an ex-girlfriend, and she wanted to get a cat, and somebody was, like, getting rid of kittens out in the desert, and we drove out. I couldn't tell you where it was. I want to say it's Covina, but it's probably not. I don't know.
Yeah, Covina's close.
I don't know where it was. Somewhere out there. And we get to the house, and it's total fucking meth city bad news.
Yeah.
And you get in there, and everything looks fucked up. And, like, I never would go to someone's house and just see needles sitting around, but we went to get the kittens, and there's fucking needles all over the kitten room. And I'm an IV addict, and it's like, it's just weird because when it crosses your path and you don't expect it to.
Yeah.
I never fucking got high in the desert. I would just drive through, you know?
Yeah.
I spent my whole life either in New York or here. So.
Yeah.
But it sounds very, very scary and tweaky. The hills have eyes
indeed. Something about the isolation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, poverty.
You're totally removed from like regular, you know what I mean? And you're just so high making shit out there. The best shit comes from the desert. I've heard wild stories. I've seen wild shit, man. It's just... Yeah, I've heard, like, hardcore, like, tweaker cooks have, like, you know, a dog on the roof of their house, you know what I mean?
They
like, chained
down.
Up so they can hear people coming from far away and...
Trip lines?
Yeah, trip lines.
They have trip lines in the, like, going around, like...
Like, Vietnam style?
Yeah.
Do you guys know Will De Los Santos, the guy who wrote Spun, which is, like, Mickey Rourke
movie? I love Spun,
That's you guys have to meet him. He's going to be there on Sunday. He wrote Spun. He's a classic fucking tweaker, and he has it all built in. I have to introduce you guys.
Did he write that off of his experiences?
Yes.
He did.
He was, he wrote that whole movie, and Jason Schwartzman played him as
a
kid.
That is the most on-point fucking... Like that's
Spun was good.
Spun,
Spun was really good. Oh, isn't she like? Doesn't he leave her locked up in the hotel
for a long time? Yeah.
And shit, that's another thing. Dealers, you see him do, you're like, what the fuck?
Dude? Yeah.
I remember like random dude, like the Jason Schwartzman character. Like, you're in a dope house and you see some dude come in. You're like, fuck, man. You know what I mean? You're like, because it's a heavyweight scene to be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shit that comes in that world. It's not. You know, dope fiends, at least, like, you know, everybody's just trying to get well or get high. But, like, meth, everybody's amped up, awake for fucking too long.
And looking for some sort of, like, stimuli, you know what I mean?
Some
like
some kind of drama.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it, more often than not, where we're from, it's, like, prison bullshit, fights, you know, violent.
Robberies.
Who the fuck is that dude? Who invited him here? Trying to prove their importance in the situation.
Yeah, it's fucking nasty. Yeah.
That's why I love coming out here, because everybody's like, yo, you party? Fuck yeah. Like, Hollywood, LA, the Valley, like, everybody's just like, it's just like, and I think it's just been that way. It seems like you watch the movies like from the 70s and how it was back then. It's just like wide open. Very rarely do you come across a place out here where a motherfucker's like, who are you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. On that weird yeah. Inland Empire shit. Mm-hmm.
You're saying there's a lot of fun-loving Hollywood partiers yes. As opposed to further away.
Yeah. Yes. I've told the story a million times, but when I would come out here and sell to these people in Hollywood, I would be blown away. You know what I mean? I'm like, man, they're really like, you know what I mean? They're like functioning.
Oh, that part.
Too, but having yeah. fun, you know what I mean? Whatever. And then, yeah. you know, I go, where we're from, like you go home and you're like, fuck, man, like who's going to try to rob me? Like,
yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Who's trying to, you know what
and
I mean?
And I just was always just like, just trying to, if I was loaded, because my whole life since I was like 17, I got introduced to the program, I was either sober and fucking ambitious as fuck and killing it. And checking in with my family and all my friends and everything, or I'm in it, loaded.
Yeah.
I'm totally off the grid. And when I'm in it like that, I'm just trying to get high every day. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to be loaded and numb out and, you know, be in the mix a little bit. But
you walk in, like, I remember I walk in this fucking apartment. There's these apartments off the 10 freeway called the Executive Lodge. You can imagine. Like,
oh my God.
You're like, is this a hotel? You know what I mean? Like, and it's big. You know what I mean? It's like, fucking like two blocks.
It's a hotel?
No, it's an apartment. Oh, okay, it's like okay. The executive. And it's the saddest shit. You know what I mean? Like, because yeah. some people are just poor people struggling. And yeah. they're surrounded
and
by it.
And they got to watch you fucking come in and out and listen to all the crazy shit and all.
Dude, I go there and these, I've told you about them before. I can never remember the name of their crew, but this graffiti kid that I knew in there, he lived there with his mom or whatever. And his mom knew what we're up to, but she was like kind of cool, you know, whatever. But it was this like giant, like Native American girl called Bear who was like, had these like weird cronies. She was big, like 6'1" and like burly.
And she had a squad.
She had a squad, but they would be like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like
wow.
They were up to no good. Oh, and they were like, and she had come across like me and Jimmy, the graffiti, but you know, we weren't like, we were with the business, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it was yeah, like, yeah, she
kind of knew, like yeah. you know, we were yeah. like, it'll be on, and you know. But I remember she had this, and then you know how it is, you kind of befriend each other.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, it is the middle of a weekday, I don't know what time it was, but me and Jimmy go to her pad, and we walk in. No, it wasn't her pad, it was another dude's pad.
That she was running.
Yeah, but we go in there, and like, it was this couple and they had like kids, but we go in there and you could just feel it. You know, we walk in, there's this blonde girl who was part of like the scene, but she has like a black eye and she's sitting there real scared.
Oh damn.
And I'm like, oh man.
Oh,
like
this is some, heavy. Yeah.
They're driving her car. Like it was some hostage situation. I was
oh,
like,
oh shit.
I look at Jimmy. I'm like, we got to get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? And then we bounce. And there was something where, like, that couple who lived there, there was a young kid, he was a really sweet kid, he was, like, 17, who lived in the apartments, and he would dabble with stuff, but, I mean, he was 17, right? But he was really close with the couple who had that apartment, this Filipino couple, uh-huh. And I remember he went over there, because the girl was cheating on her husband with the security guard, and the kid was kind of drunk, the 17-year-old, and he's like, don't do this. Like, you guys have a good family. He's a sweet kid, man, you know?
Oh, damn.
Then the security guard of the Executive Lodge, that's who she was cheating with.
Uh-huh.
And the kid was just drunk saying shit, and that security guard, who's not an armed security guard, like, the kid came in the house, and that dude shot him and killed him.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I'm like, and then, like, I don't, you know, this is before cell phones. I don't remember how we caught, but I remember we go there, and we're like, wait, what? Like, you know, like, these people are tweaking.
In oh,
this,
shit.
The girl's hanging out in the security guard's apartment. The kid goes over there drunk, saying shit. I don't think he did anything physical. And then a security guard who's not armed shoots him and kills him. And like no charges are filed.
That's
it's like,
so
oh,
crazy.
It was fucking.
It's crazy out here. I know four people that have been involved in home invasions. They're tying people up, robbing them. You don't hear stories about that in New York. There's no home invasions. There's no tweaker fucking execution style shootings.
Yeah.
It's like fucked up. I'm sorry. I'm a big pussy from New York City.
No, it's
dude. Same. I that's why I was what I was kind of getting at. Like I was just trying to get loaded, but through that process, I met all these people throughout my life that I loved a lot. All of them had cool redeeming qualities.
Of course,
but some of them were really dangerous fucking people. And,
well, you add these chemicals,
and I would
to somebody.
Party yeah. for a that, minute, and then I would be like, all right, I'll see you later. I would just walk out the door in the middle of that.
Unlike meth, cocaine, like any other drug, people who do methamphetamine, it brings out the worst.
Yeah, like, that's true.
That drug, really, I don't care what anybody says, it, that like, it is evil.
It's evil. Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
It's like 28 years later or something. It's yeah. that stripped from all humanity. Yeah.
It is.
Gone.
It's.
Well, it's just it. You know it, how it works. It just gives you these dopamine rushes, right? Where you just like you feel so good when you do it, and then especially the method of use
yeah.
is super different. Like people snort it. And were like those guys that I've heard from a couple of pretty reliable sources, those guys on those fucking Alaskan king crab fishing boats swallow methamphetamine and go out there and fish and make millions of dollars. And I've seen people that are just snorters of speed and they work and they fucking, you know what I mean?
My friend's mom was like that.
And then people like smoke it and they just.
But that's the line between being just, functional or not functional. Yeah. You rarely find someone who's shooting meth into their necks that's functional.
Yeah.
That's something you rarely, rarely find. 100%. When I was out here, I wanted to go do Deadliest Catch. I wanted to get on meth and go fishing in Alaska. But then I knew that I remembered I was Jewish and it wasn't going to work out for me. But I really wanted to do it, man.
Dude, those guys are like fucking men's men, bro.
Those are the best. They're fucking crazy. Shit.
That is so crazy. So crazy.
Elmer did that. Elmer went out. Not on meth. Yeah, our friend Elmer went out. Yeah, and he fucking went.
Made his fortune in the crab hunting.
In the crab market.
I love that. How much money did they make?
Dude, he made money. He was sober when we went out there. He was all nervous and he got sober, went out, and we was like, but how am I going to go to meetings? We're like, fool, like, whatever, you'll figure, you know, like, do it, bring a big book, do whatever, you know. And then he did it. He stayed sober, came back, got the check, and went straight back to the pipe.
Oh,
you know?
Man. Yeah.
There was a guy on that show who was a classic junkie, and he wound up getting kicked off the show and like, sort of cleaning up, and his brother took over the boat, and I was trying to get that kid on dopey forever, and for a minute he was gonna come on, and then I don't know what happened to him.
Their dad passed, right? And they were raised on the boats.
Yeah.
Is that in Alaska?
Yeah. In the Bering Straits. The best.
Dave's, you're a fucking wizard when it comes to hunting people down. Like, you get, you know, you're like...
I'm crazy. I have serious mental illness. I'm fucking sick.
I mean, you
sick.
Like lockdown, you know. How many episodes have you done now?
I mean, put it like this. I put out 578 on Friday, but I haven't numbered the weird Wednesday episodes I dropped to Tuesday. I've probably done like 800 episodes.
That's incredible, man.
But
that's amazing.
I'm like mentally disturbed. You know, I'm all about it.
We've done 34. Well,
you guys aren't. What's your number?
Right? Is that the right number?
I go after it like kind of the
like
way
you
I
chase
used
the bag.
Yeah. Well, like, if I needed to get heroin, like I used in a real, like I would stay on heroin for long periods of time, and if I couldn't get it, I'd go find it. You know how it is. You go from place to place.
Same, man, yeah.
But you have a day job too, right?
I do. With guests, though, like I have a vision. Okay, this fucking Jason Mewes. You know Jason Mewes?
Yeah,
so,
I fucking love that guy. That's Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh, yeah. I've been writing Jason Mewes, swear to God, for 10 years. I wrote his wife for 5 years. A few years ago, I got the dude, Ethan Suple from...
I know Ethan.
Yeah. He came on. He was fucking great.
Is he connected to Jay Mewes?
Yeah, they were both in Mallrats. Did
Ethan have a drug problem?
Yeah, serious drug problems. Heroin problem.
Wait, is he the heavyset guy?
He was. Now he's super
he's
fit.
Ripped. I used to go to spin classes with that fool. No, and he...
This episode is brought to you by spin classes.
No, he's also the fucking like nicest guy in the world.
So sweet.
Is he went on to be on My Name is Earl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
So he goes on a cruise with Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, and he goes to Jason Mewes. This guy has been trying to get you on the show for years. Would you do it? He's like, yeah, give him my number. So then it's another 3 years me texting Jason Mewes like three times a week. Like, and I won't stop because I'm just like that.
Yeah.
And so 2 weeks ago, he comes on and it's remote. He comes on and the internet dies and he's like, yo, I got to go. And I was like, well, we're not done with this. He's like, oh, we'll do it next week, man. And fucking, he didn't do it. And then we were supposed to do it on Wednesday. Dude. And he texts me, I'm not feeling good. And it's like, holy shit, is it going to be another 10 years to get part two of Jason?
Most prolific. But dude,
does he live in Philly?
No, he lives here.
He's so incredible.
He's great. And but I'm just like that. Like I'll and now I'm starting to learn patience and I'll fucking wait. And eventually we get people and I'm crazy with it. I also love sitting with somebody and hearing the story and seeing what their life is like now and seeing, like when Danny came on the first time, like I was out here for 5 years, I was in a methadone program. I forgot the name of it. And we were in the same methadone program.
What a trip, huh?
That's how it happens with this fucking fool.
And I had forgotten the name of the fucking place.
Was it the one on Beverly?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so like, and then it all came back the second he said it. And we remember things like that. And like the coolest thing about Dopey is that the listeners are very involved and like you'll see on Sunday there'll be a bunch of Dopey folk and it's I feel really happy to be a part of it, even though like I'm crazy and lustful for power and fame and glory.
Do you know what your most listened to episode is?
It was the episode after Chris died, but now it might be Billy Strings.
He's outstanding.
Dude, yeah.
There's a video of him where he's like 19 years old and he looks like some Mennonite kid, really short hair. He's in the basement and there's this hippie kid barefoot and he's like, yo, play that new song you wrote. And he fucking busts out this song. It's called Dust in a Baggie and it's about meth. And he fucking goes off and it's got like 100 billion views.
Really?
But I knew he had a crazy drug history. So I would, and the way I write somebody is I just write, yo. Like, that's what I'll write on Instagram direct message. I'll just write, yo, yo, yo. And one day he's like, yo, man, what's up? And I was like, do you want to do the show? And he was like, yeah. And he gives me his manager's number. And I wrote his manager, and the manager's like, he's not doing the show. And I was like, okay. So I forgot about it for years. And then Billy Strings plays that Grateful Dead 60th anniversary, and he plays Wharf Rat. And I was like, wow. So I just wrote him. I was like, that Wharf Rat was fucking sick. And he was like, thanks, man. And then he's like, he almost told me he was struggling and his mother had just died of a straight meth overdose.
Whoa.
Straight meth overdose. And wow. She had been getting high with his fans and he was fucked up and he was still smoking weed. And he was like, and we talked on the phone, but he was like, I don't think I can do the show. And I was like, dude, just take my number and whatever. And then I think 5 months later, he went on like Terry Gross Fresh Air. And they're asking him about his mother died, and then he played the concert, and he tells the audience that his mother died. And then he tells the interviewer, it wasn't Terry Gross, it was her replacement or something. He tells the interviewer that his mother had just overdosed, and the interviewer was like shook. He's like, oh, could you play another song now? And then the next day he writes me, he's like, I want to do your show. Because he needed to tell his story.
Yeah.
So me and my friend drove to New Jersey where he was on tour. And every show I ever saw Billy Strings on, he came in with his guitar. For ours, he came in with this briefcase and it was full of his mother's poetry. And he just read his mother's poetry and he cried.
Wow.
And now he's sober. He stopped smoking weed.
Wow.
But it was like, it was my relentlessness, but then he just needed to fucking tell his story. He could have done it by himself. Yeah. I was very fortunate
That's
that
amazing.
He came on and he's a cool fucking guy.
Yeah.
And his playing is
sick. How old is he?
I think he's probably 30.
Yeah.
Huge, I mean, such a big future.
Yeah,
him,
he's a
you know?
Huge,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah. I didn't know you were a big jam band guy, that you were into, you know?
I was never, I was a deadhead. You know what I mean? Like, I got into the deadhead. I took acid before I smoked weed, seeing Jerry in Madison Square Garden in, like, 91 or something. And then I, like, got into the Dead. And I never really got into anything else, but I liked rock and roll music.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a band called The Slip that would play on the East Coast. They were good. And then, like, whatever, the culture was interesting to me because it was full of drugs.
Yeah.
You know, so you could trip out, you could do drugs and hear music and stuff. But I always was very Jerry guy. You're a jam band guy?
No, I'm a dead guy, but I never saw Jerry play, you know?
Well,
missed that. Yeah, I missed that. I moved here in 92, you know? So I was 7 when I moved here, you know? So I would have, by the time he died, what, 95?
Yeah, he died in 95.
Yeah, I would have been 10 years old. And then my parents weren't taking me to Dead, yeah. I turned 18, and the night I turned 18, we went to, I was going to get my weed card the next day, and we went up north to go get it. But Further were playing the show somewhere. I don't even remember where it was. It was like Bob some camera,
Weir, right?
Yeah.
No, it was all of them. Mm-hmm. Everybody except Jarrett.
Yeah.
Further was.
Yeah.
Oh, Further was.
Yeah, because there was so many different. Yeah, there was so many, like, you know. So and Further were touring, so we went and saw them play and dropped L. And we were at the Further show. I was with a friend and we were like really tripped out. And we went and we're like, dude, we wanted to roll a joint and we didn't know where to go. And we found these guys that were sitting around and they had yellow balloons. And we sat with them and we were like, hey, can we? And they had candy. They offered us candy. We walked up and we were like, yeah, we'll take some candy. And we sat down and my friend rolled a joint and lit it up. And we're like, hey, can we sit with you guys? They're like, sure. And rolled the joint and passed it to me and then passed it to them. And they're like, oh, no, we don't
we're
do
sober.
That.
We're
like,
sober.
Yeah, and we're like, what the fuck? Yeah.
They rolled the joint? Like,
No. Maybe we rolled the joint. Okay, I don't remember who. Hey, honestly, I don't remember who rolled the joint. But we sat with them and they were really cool. And they were like, they said something like, they were like, we're clean and sober deadheads or something, you know, or
wharf
like
rat,
yeah, they were wharf rats, yeah.
For me, it wasn't at first. It wasn't the music; it was the drugs. Yeah. I wanted the drugs, and then it was I was really into the stories. Like, you know, did you ever read the book Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test?
Yeah, of course.
I read that book and the history of acid, Ken Kesey, Jerry Garcia. And then I just fell in love with Jerry Garcia. Yeah.
Did Ken Kesey invent acid?
No. Okay. No, an old, I think, Swiss chemist named Albert Hoffman invented acid. But Ken Kesey wrote the play, or the
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. While he was working at a mental institution.
And being dosed.
Oh, he was dosing then, too?
It was an experiment, and first it was like morning glory seeds, and then it was like peyote and mescaline, and then it was LSD.
Oh, no shit.
And then he was writing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest while he's getting dosed, and then he starts stealing the LSD and bringing it back to his friends. And they all have these parties together, and they call themselves the Merry Pranksters, and then the dead started playing their parties. And that was
how they came together? That's crazy.
And I love that story, and I loved taking acid and getting high. And then I really just fell in love with Jerry Garcia.
Yeah.
And I got into heroin the same way, though, reading about it until I tried it, and then I was like, oh, this is helping my neuroses a lot.
Yeah.
I was so lame to the music side of it, like, I remember Touch of Grey coming out and being on the radio, you know, when that album was called In the Dark, or something like that, right? And they had the video on MTV with the skeletons playing the music.
Oh, yeah.
Touch of Grey was the name of the song. And a bunch, you know, the old, like, kind of like older, like, contractors and shit, like, listen to that shit while they're drinking beers and shit, you know? And then I remember, like, you know, going and getting drugs at the parking lot of the dead festivals, but never staying and watching the music at all. And then way later, Sublime, right? Yeah, Sublime covers Scarlet Begonias. Had no idea that was a Grateful Dead song until, like, way later hearing, like, in my later years, I started listening to stuff like Fire on the Mountain and shit, kind of nostalgically. And then I heard Scarlet Begonias. I was like, I have fucking no idea that was a cover.
Yeah.
It's such a great song.
When I was a kid, I worked at a TV company. I made a music show, and that's where I got strung out on heroin while I made this music show. And I was interviewing, like, big people. I interviewed Bob Weir, I interviewed Ween, I interviewed Flaming Lips. I went and I interviewed the Long Beach Dub All Stars Warped Tour, and I was fucking high as fuck. I couldn't even look at them. Like, I couldn't say fucking anything. We're in fucking Randall's Island and I'm trying to, like, talk about Bradley Knoll and I'm like high and
his kid's the singer now.
I had him on the show. Really? I had Jacob on the show.
Oh, no shit.
And it was fucking cool.
The kid sounds
and
like
he's
the
sober.
Dad.
Really? He sounds so much like the dad, and he's sober.
Wild. Oh, that's cool. I think I saw on Spotify that there's a new Sublime album out.
Yeah, they're just putting out a new record.
With him, right?
With him.
Yeah.
And the two, you know, junkie ne'er-do-well Sublime guys. Those guys, like, I want to talk to them.
I thought those two guys didn't do dope. I thought it was just
Bradley. No, I've never done dope with them, so I can't really say.
Right, exactly.
But I might have heard a few things.
A legend has.
I'm not sure.
You can't say someone does dope unless you've done dope with them. If you're, like, keeping to the street code, you know?
I think one of them, if I remember, because I was also, like, really into all those stupid, like, behind the music shows. Like,
I love that show.
I was addicted to that. I loved it. So yeah. I think they struggled. But the kid, Jacob, is sober, sounds like Bradley, and Bradley died when Jacob was one. You know, it's a beautiful story. Yeah. And now but the pressure is Jacob wanted to have his own band and he didn't get success with his own band, and he's like fucking superstar in Sublime now, which is not what he wanted to do.
Wow.
So it's one of those heavy is the head that wears the crown,
like a Jacob
sort
Dylan
of thing.
Kind of thing or something.
But Jacob Dylan never had to go out and do Dylan songs.
That's true.
Jacob Dylan's not going to go bust out fucking Highway 61.
That's true.
You know, he's doing one headlight.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to a podcast. Someone like Marin, it wasn't Marin, but it was somebody like that that's been doing podcasts for a really long time, and he had him on.
Jacob Dylan?
Yeah, and he was talking about, like, you know, we've known each other 30 years, and you've been doing music, and I'm like, fuck, I must be old, because in my mind, I'm thinking, like, Jacob Dylan had the one album with one headlight on it, you know what I mean? But, like, supposedly he's been doing his own thing for fucking 3 decades, you know what I mean?
I think Bob Dylan has some good heroin stories.
I'm sorry, yeah. You think? Yeah.
Did anybody watch the Dylan movie?
Him and Woody Guthrie just fucking with those eyedropper... rigs, probably, you know, the old school ones.
I don't think Woody Guthrie was shooting that. What was which Bob Dylan movie?
The one with Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah. It's good. It's fucking good. It's
a really good movie.
It's fucking good. Do you see it?
Yeah, I watched it. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I feel like they could have like made the crux of it be something besides that festival. You know, I feel like in my mind there were way more like bigger chapters.
They just wanted to show him like when he stopped being of the folk people.
Yeah.
Dylan is my number one. Dylan and Steve Jones. You know Steve Jones?
Yeah.
You know him personally?
Yeah. I've spoke for him before and shit.
It's crazy. Dylan and Steve Jones are my number one dopey guest. That's Jonesy. And I Jones is more likely than Dylan.
You know where I met Jones is at Dr. Nazi's office.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
How is he? How is he?
Dude, cool. So nice. Yeah.
There's this Beverly Hills dentist that does all the punk. All the punkers'
everybody,
teeth.
Everybody, yeah.
Dude, is nitrous a relapse for you guys or no? In the dentist's office?
For me, yes.
In the dentist's office?
I don't know. I've never had to do it in the dentist's office.
In the dentist's office?
No, that's like if you break your fucking leg and they give you morphine.
I'm not talking about nitrous when they're recording
this podcast. There's a parking lot here.
Yeah. What was that shit that you took a picture of on that thread we were talking
about? That was Jimmy who took that picture.
He put that.
Oh, the fucking dude, the what's it called? The galaxy gas. You know, these big ass containers. It's crazy. They're everywhere. We'll find them outside of the cafe. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just big ass.
Yeah. Mike Matalora posted a picture the other day in the parking lot of the Ralphs by his house on Ventura and Coldwater Canyon of like two people just.
But kids are like losing, dude. They're like losing their like their button. They're like, I have a friend who, a kid that I grew up with that like can't walk. They lost his motor skills from it. Yeah. And people are like, really, it's for you. The research is not. Not anywhere near where, like, you know, like it's fucking up people so bad. Because we were like, when we would do it at shows, you would do it to enhance whatever else you were doing. We called it hippie crack because it was like you do it and you keep doing it, you know, until the tank runs out. But we were doing it on like acid or on ecstasy or on whatever mushrooms because it enhances it. And you like do a balloon and then you forget, like you go wander off.
But it's also very special because like nobody had those tanks unless you were at a show.
Yeah,
it's not like you had a tank at home.
Unless you were like driving around in your fucking in your Nissan Maxima with fucking a tank. You know?
And that's what you're seeing. Is like police chases or an accident happens on the freeway, and of course people start filming right away, right when it's like stopped traffic, and like two youngsters get out of the fucking car with the tank and run up the side of the freeway fucking embankment trying to get into the neighborhood with the tank and shit. It's crazy.
It's a trip.
You ever smoke PCP?
I never smoked PCP.
Interesting.
I never smoked PCP, and that was a drug I actually turned down.
Oh, but you guys had angel dust, right?
That's the same thing.
Oh, okay.
I was in college, and I wasn't really... I was just smoking weed and taking pills and tripping and whatever, and it was like a festival day, and there were these two really cute girls in a field smoking, and I wandered up to them, and I was like, oh, can I smoke? And they were like, sure. And they were like, but it's PCP. And I was like, no, I didn't, and I didn't smoke it.
Be glad.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Are you a big PCP guy?
No, Danny is.
I could see that. I could see that, fool.
Hey, fool. Hey, fool.
You be getting
wet?
You want to get wet, fool?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did we ask you last time when we had you on Zoom, did we ask you if you ever seen a ghost? Did we ask you for the ghost story?
I have a ghost story.
You do?
Yeah. My ghost story was, and I'll tell it again because that was a million years ago. And we had a bad connection on
Dude,
Zoom.
Dude, it's always bad connection. Yeah.
Fucking, I was in summer camp. I had a ghost, a really scary thing happened the other day. And I shouldn't even tell the story, but I'm going to tell it because it was so scary. My wife's father died in January, and he was dying for years and years and years. And we took care of him. Like, he had Lewy body dementia. He had Alzheimer's. He had prostate cancer all at the same time. And he died in January. We're all very close with him. And at Easter, he had a room in the back where we kept him, and we kind of took care of him. We'd walk him out and back. And I went in there, and all of a sudden I saw him. It was really fucking, it was like my mind playing a trick on me because so many times I checked on him, but I looked, and I didn't tell my wife, I haven't told anybody this story, but I looked into that room and I saw him sitting in the corner, and I fucking, then I went into the bathroom and it was dark, and I like got freaked out, and I started looking in the mirror, like looking for him, you know what I mean? And then I went back to the room again. And he wasn't there that time.
Wow.
But it was fucking, you could sense how fucked up I was.
Was he, when you saw him, was he like healthy and
no.
happy?
No. He was withered. He was withered. But if I felt he was there.
Wow.
When I don't, and I'm not like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I'm really not like that. Yeah. And I really felt like he was there.
Wow. I've been having this, I haven't told anybody this. I think I mentioned this to Camille. Maybe, I don't even know if I told her. But when I've been doing dishes in our kitchen, so we have like a little front yard thing, I'll be doing dishes and I keep sensing somebody there. And it's like out the corner of my eye, I see this. Right. It's like, you know, I haven't been able to see her, but I could tell it's like a woman and she's wearing, and I see her. And it's happened multiple times where I like see her kind of like coming by and I'll look. And there's nobody. I mean, obviously, there's nobody there. You know, it's like an enclosed area in our front yard, you know? And it's like, I know the feeling where I know, and every fucking time it gets me, I'm like, fuck, what, you know?
It's crazy. Multiple the feeling, times, yeah. The feeling is it, because is it fear or is it something else?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Are you just freaked out that there's this phenomenon or is it the phenomenon itself?
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. But before we go, I didn't give a shout out to this kid, Jake from West Virginia. Sick banjo player, crazy It's All Bad fan.
Oh, cool.
Dude.
Jake from West Virginia.
What's up, Jake?
He works on a weed farm in Oregon, and he's definitely listening.
Nice.
Dude. What's up, Jake?
Yeah. What's up, Jake?
Super talent.
Down up there. Trimming.
Yeah, trimming. Yeah.
You know what they call him? Trimmigrants.
Trimmigrants?
Nice.
I heard that they worked their fucking asses off on that.
Yeah, they do.
John has a story. He went and worked on a weed farm in Mendocino or something. Mm-hmm.
Have you watched Murder Mountain?
No, but I
you
worked
need
on a
to fucking watch
I worked
it.
On a weed farm though. I was fucking here, right? And I was on Beverly Bart, whatever, methadone, and I'm just trying to get them to give me 30 days of take home because they're going to hire me on some farm in Sonoma, right? So I get to the 30 days of take home and I put them in one of these big large 1 gallon bags and I'm still like shooting dope and taking pills and everything. And I'm driving. It takes me like 12 hours to drive to Sonoma from here. I think how long should it take?
Like a 6 hour drive.
Yeah, at least 6 hours. Yeah.
I don't know exactly.
Yeah, 6 and a half. Yeah, like
eight,
six,
it's took, eight, took yeah. me like 15, not, yeah, not took 12, me like 15 yeah. hours to get up there.
Typical dope fiend shit.
I'm pulling over taking naps, you're taking like, pictures of seagulls on the way.
You're like, do I have a flat tire? Like,
and
like
I'm
that.
Also just a bad driver. I grew up in Manhattan. I shouldn't even be driving now. I'm fucking bad. And when I get to Sonoma, it's night. And the cops pull me over right when I get there. And they go into the front and I got a thing of pills. And I was like, oh, it's prescription Xanax. You can't take that. Yeah. Then they go in the back and they find the 30 bottles of methadone. And I said, oh, it's prescription methadone. You can't take that. And then they found weed. And I was like, I have the prescription for that too.
No way.
And he's like, yeah, seriously. And he's like, okay, you're on your way. And I left and I get to the weed farm. And
damn, you're lucky they didn't take the methadone.
Oh, yeah. But I get to the weed farm. I swear to God, I probably spent 10 hours there, and I'm high, and I was so annoying. 10 hours in, they fire me. Fucking kick me out. Because I wouldn't shut up about how I hated their music, and I'm talking shit, and they fucking kick me out. And the next day, they're like, you got to go. And I was like, dude, I'm supposed to be here for 30 days. I was like, can you at least give me some weed? They gave me a quarter. They're like,
a quarter.
Yeah. You're like another bean and cheese burrito.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's damn, that's so funny. You're high. You're just annoying them.
Yeah, yeah, it's not good.
So you just got a lighter. You're like,
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, dude, Dave, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Man, that's great. Yeah. Hey, between our episodes, you guys, if you haven't already, check out Dopey. Dave has some amazing guests on.
Dopey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Check it out.
We're big fans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Thanks for being our inaugural guest in this beautiful studio.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Yeah. I'm very grateful.
Dave's wise advice for us is... keep fucking recording. Just don't stop.
No, and you know what? He told me that when I did the episode. Yeah. He's like, you know, you got to fucking, you guys are having a hard time because you're doing it by committee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But we are a committee, so we just have to double down. And we got lots of great content coming your way, guys.
Dave said that we should do one for every 40 he did, and that'd be good. That's what he told us.
Listen, you guys have fans. You have a great show. You have a beautiful room. Just fucking come once a week and do the stupid show.
Yeah. No, we're going to. Oh, speaking of rooms, we got to give a shout out.
Oh, yes.
Carol Ayers, the queen.
Dude, absolutely. So we would like to give a big thanks to the Archer Rivas Foundation for hosting us here. If you need help, if you're struggling, please reach out. We'll throw up the link. We'll throw up the, you know, we'll put it in our whatever tiny URL in our thing, however we can. If you're struggling, if you want to get into a sober living, if you need to get treatment, if you're out here and you're just trying to get this thing going and you need some clothes or whatever, they're here to help. They're an amazing foundation. I worked with a sober living where they would help and scholarship guys getting into there. And I mean, they're rad and they are a big part of being able of us being here and hosting us, and they welcomed us into their home, and yeah, we want to give them all the love that they deserve.
Amazing. Archer Rivas Foundation.
You could check out Dopey 14 episodes a week. There's one posted at 2 a.m. every Tuesday morning, every Friday, the real episode.
No, I'm putting them out every fucking day now.
Every day.
No way.
5 days a week.
Amazing.
Are you serious?
Amazing.
I have a whole thing, yeah.
You have that many?
Mondays, I'm replaying the Chris episodes. We're up to episode 22.
Oh, okay.
Tuesday, I do the Patreon show. I do a little teaser on Tuesday. Wednesday, it's the second show. We call it the Wednesday Dose of Dopey. There's always a little new shit where I'll read something from the audience or I'll play a voicemail from the audience. Thursday is the best of Dopey.
Oh, okay.
Which maybe Reno and Danny, and one day you can be in too.
You have to come on first.
And then Friday is the new show. But I'm just like, I listen to this fucking podcast called Knicks Film School about the Knicks, and I always want another show. So I'm like, I bet you Dopey fans would want more shows. Yeah. So I'm just doing it.
Nice.
Good. Yeah, well, thanks so much for coming
on.
Thank you.
Dude,
thanks,
this has been so fun. You know, it's so rad, and we can't wait. You know, we can't wait to check out Dopey Wood this week. And thanks, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Peace.